Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Hi, Stormy. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hello, Pete, wherever you are.
Yes. No Pete today. Yeah. It's sad, but that's okay. We were just talking about how organized we were today.
I know. Like, I can't believe how organized
we were.
We've
got a really cool show
ahead. And Pete's absence has nothing to do with that at all.
No.
But that's it. We do actually have a third person here.
We do.
We're having a chat with it. So on the phone, I'm going to say on the phone, but in Discord with us at the moment, Smoke, who is a speedrunner and is going to be participating at ASM 2022, which is happening in Adelaide from Wednesday next week. Smoke, how are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on.
That's all right. Like, when Grumpy said he knew someone that was going to be speedrunning, I just thought, you know what, I just have to talk to you because, like, coming off the back of GDQ, that wasn't enough for me. I have to see more speed running, and I'm just so glad that you could have a chat with us tonight.
Yeah, well, there'll be plenty of it next week. So,
well, I was saying to Jim, because I'm pretty new to, well, I mean, I know what speed running is, but I didn't realize how big it was, like, I guess in the gaming community. And obviously you're traveling to Adelaide, right, to go and play Jack 2. So I wanted to know, like, tell us more about how you got into, like, your speed running, and I'm going to ask you more about Jack 2 soon. But, yeah, how did you get into it, and, like I guess, why did you get into speed running? Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, well, I think most people who, like, do it nowadays found it through, like, the events like GDQ and Twitch streamers. The most notable run I can think back to that, like, I watched was by Narcissa Wright. She did a any percent run for Ocarina of Time way back in, like, I think it was 2013 2014, and that was just a really iconic run because it just kind of just opened the doors about, like, how broken games can be and what you can accomplish if your goal is to, like, beat them as quickly as possible.
I'm glad you brought up Ocarina of Time, because that is one of, when I talk about speed running to people and I try and explain, like, it's not just going fast in a game, although going fast is the goal, but it's, like, the glitches that get found. And, like, for ages, Ocarina of Time in particular was that game where somebody worked out that if you could clip through the door in the first boss fight in the Deku Tree, it took you straight to the Ganon fight. And now it's even quicker than that. Like, there's somewhere in Kokiri Forest, I think, that they can clip through and end up in that last fight as well. And the any percent run for Ocarina of Time is under 10 minutes, which is...
Yeah, it's really insane.
Well, I don't know how anybody finds that sort of stuff.
Well, Smoke, I was going to say,
It's a whole process. It's really fascinating to, like... Like, this stuff isn't well documented, but if you are kind of within a community, you kind of can get a good idea of, like, what people are doing to, like, break games and, like, experiment and stuff. But just if you're watching from the outside, it's just, like... It's mind-blowing.
It's magic, that's what it is.
I was going to say as well, like, so you're speedrunning Jack 2. Is that the game that you started speedrunning? Or is this something that you've always, you know, wanted to speedrun? Like, tell us a little bit more about, like, your relationship with the game.
Yeah, well, Jack 2 is kind of interesting. I didn't start with it. The game I started with was actually Ocarina of Time. That was, like, 2016, 2017. And that game was, like, a lot of fun, but... it got a bit overwhelming at times just because, like I said, how complicated it is to learn and, like, keep up with when it comes to, like, learning new strats and stuff.
And it's super optimized at this point as well.
Yeah, it's very competitive and, like, yeah, it was a bit overwhelming. So I started running another Zelda game called The Minish Cap, which is, like, a Game Boy 1 2D Zelda. And by running Minish Cap, I was actually introduced to a guy called Sikina. He used to have the world record in Jack 2. And so just by proxy of knowing him from Minish Cap, I was introduced to Jack 2. And I was like, I remember that game. That game was pretty cool. I wonder if that's, like, a good run. And I had my copy of it from when I was a kid in the PS2. So I was like, I gave it a go. And I guess I haven't looked back. It's a really fun run.
Oh, we were doing a bit of research beforehand as well on speedrun.com, where you can see all the different games and the speedrunning charts in there. And I was super impressed to see that you're fifth on the Jack 2 leaderboard there. But one thing I did notice is you're playing with the Japanese copy there. And of the top four, three play on the NTSC version and one plays on the PAL version. So, Like, I know normally Japanese text goes quicker, but Jak 2 is a voiced game. So why pick the Japanese version over one of the other versions?
It's kind of funny because, yeah, you can see there's European PAL, NTSC America, and then NTSC Japan. All the versions are basically the same. So there's no, like, technical reason to be running on JP. The only reason I run on JP now is just because I was able to get a really good deal on this, like, Cinnabar Red Slim PS2, and those are only from Japan. So I just said, well, I own this console now. I may as well play on it. So I got a Japanese copy of the game, and that's what I run on now.
How many, this is obviously a very just like fun question here, but like how many times do you reckon you've played Jak 2 now? Like overall, if you had to ballpark it.
Well, in terms of like attempts, I'd probably say it's nearing like 10,000 attempts. As far as like completing the game, maybe like 100 times, like a full run.
And do you find yourself
something along like those lines?
Do you find yourself still enjoying it despite playing through it that many times, or do you feel like it's just like second nature to you? That I don't know. Like, do you feel like it's do you still get some enjoyment from the game still, or do you feel like you're past that point and it's just like a race now in your head and you just want to get to the end?
There's parts of it I really like, and then there's parts of it that do really like wear down on you. It's kind of just like a mixture of like both good and bad. For me, like the one thing that always keeps me coming back is it's just fun to like interact with the community. There's like a lot of other Jak runners that are like really fun to sort of chill with in your own stream, in their streams, you know, looking for new strats or like little optimizations to make the run faster. So a bit of both. It's a lot of fun, but there is a bit of frustration. But you kind of just take like the good and the bad.
So you mentioned there, like you've started probably 10,000, but only finished like 100 runs. That's like having watched speedrunners practice and stuff like that. And I'm always fascinated at like where the common reset points are, where people commonly trip up and go, nah, I don't want to finish this run. And interestingly enough, like it always seems to sort of happen more towards the beginning of the game, just because you go, oh no, I've stuffed up now, too late, we're going. But where is sort of a common reset point for you in Jak 2?
Like I think just by nature it does end up being in the beginning of the run, like just no matter what game, because like unless you have to watch like a really long intro cutscene or something, it just kind of in your head makes sense, like, oh, I messed up really early on, you may as well reset and try again. But like for Jak 2, it's actually it's not just a mental thing, but it's also like an actual part of the run that's kind of like it actually like really drives a lot of people away. There's two missions in particular within the first like 13 minutes. There's a boss fight called Baron Praxis. There's a lot of like random elements to that fight that'll make you lose like a ton of time on average. And then after that fight, like a mission later, you have to do this mission called Escort Men Through Sewer. Or and that's also another really like, it's an escort mission and there's a lot of like RNG time loss that can occur. So like the Baron Praxis fight and the sewer mission combined just kind of naturally lead you to like resetting a ton in the first like 12 minutes.
I was going to say one of our Goa team members is in the chat at the moment saying, I can feel Smoke's power level is over 9,000 just through the voice. So like over 100 playthroughs alone is just a wicked achievement, like a milestone to have. And I'm so amazed. I guess like one of my other questions as well for you is, for anyone who's thinking of getting into like speedrunning or wanting to kind of know where to start, like what are your kind of tips or what kind of got you started on like your speedrunning journey? How did you get there?
I would say like just look for, if you play a game a lot, like you played it a lot either as a kid or you play it now like casually, if you really enjoy it and maybe you want to get some more out of it, you know, checking speedrun.com for that game, looking at some runs, maybe looking for anything that's been done at like GDQ or ASM, ESA. There's a ton of events like that where people commentate their run and showcase it. And if it looks interesting, it's, it can seem overwhelming to try and like learn a new game or like learn the tricks, but you can, you don't have to do all the really hard strats or like learn all the glitches or whatever. You can do it at your own pace. It's like, it's not a competition. You know, there are leaderboards and stuff, but at the end of the day, you're going for a personal best. Mm. And whether that's a record or not, it's still like a personal journey. So,
yeah. And that can be hard, especially when you've got a leaderboard right there and you're going, oh, the world record's low in Jack, 54 minutes, 35 seconds. And you're sitting kind of, I want to make that. But like I did one a while back in Super Mario World. I played that game to death as a kid. And I did a race on another streamer's stream with Super Mario World, no Star Road. And I think I got just over an hour there and I looked it up and I went, that's pretty cool. That's not going to take much to get under like the top 200 there. And for me, that was the goal, to get in the top 200, just because it felt like an achievable thing. And I did get there. I did have a look, just because I think I did that about a year and a half ago. And I went and had a look before this stream and I'm at like 273 now. So I have to get back into that and give it another go.
Yeah, I was saying earlier to Jim, because we were talking about speedrunning and I hadn't really done it. I remember I played the Resident Evil 3 remake and I went, oh man, I love this game. I could probably play it again. So I went, oh, let's just see how fast I could do it. And it wasn't until I was watching other people, there were so many things I picked up that while I was like, oh man, if I just skipped this bit, or if I looked over this section or did this a little bit differently, that could save me so much time. And there's so much you can learn from, I guess, watching other people too. So yeah, I'm so, again, incredibly gobsmacked by just how clever and creative you can be with finishing these games in record time. I think it's incredible. Are there any other games as well that you speedrun? Like, I mean, obviously Jack 2 is like your focus at the moment, but is there anything else that you like to, you know, try to endeavor to beat now and again, Smoke? Or
I got into Half-Life 1 runs for a bit. They were a lot of fun. That's a completely different like game to what I'm used to, I guess. FPS, very movement heavy. The gold SRC engine's a lot of fun to mess around in. So I did dabble in that for a bit, but yeah, for now it's mainly just Jack 2. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get tempted to run like Jack and Daxter or Jack 3?
I've dabbled in all three games. I've done a 100% run of Jack and Daxter, and I've done a no out of bounds run for Jack 3. But I've always wanted to go to both of those games, but like every time like I get the itch to like try it out, I always get brought back to Jack 2, because I'm like, I have like a lot of goal times I'm trying to go for, in particular the 54 right now. So
nice.
That's wicked.
Well, Smoke, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. And don't forget, for everybody watching, maybe listening on the podcast, ASM 2022 starts next Wednesday, the 13th of July, I think it is. And if you want to see Smoke running, 9:30 a.m. WA time on Sunday the 17th.
You can see that. Also, anywhere else we can find you, Smoke? Do you stream on Twitch or anything at all?
Yeah, if you want to watch me run Jack 2, you can check it out at twitch.tv/smoker2g, all one word.
Awesome. I think Jim's just about to pop that in the chat for anyone that's looking to give you a follow and check you out. All the best, by the way. I hope it all goes well. I'm really looking forward to hearing how you go, and hopefully watching you next week too.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for bringing me on the show. It's a lot of fun.
No worries. Bye.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye.
Hi, everyone. How are we?
Hot damn. Like, I love That's talking awesome. About that.
That was
like,
so cool.
I love speedrunning so much. And I normally get like a little down period after a GDQ happens. Because
explain again, GDQ. Okay.
So GDQ is Games Done Quick. It's a big speedrunning event in the States that runs for 2 weeks, 24 hours. And they just finished up on Sunday, I think. And like, I always get a little bit of, oh, I want to see more. And then ASM's here, so I can start watching ASM next week. I can't wait. Can't wait to see it.
We should quickly say hi to everyone in the chat. Just, we had lots of people drop in while we were doing the interview. So Slatos, our very own Grumpy Goron, and Natty is here too. Gamma.
Hello, Gamma, yes. And DJ Drifter was there earlier as well. Hello to everybody.
And anyone lurking as well? well. Smoke was in the chat too. and yes, hello everyone. How are we all doing this week? Have you had a good week so far?
I have had a pretty good week.
Yeah.
Yeah, doing a bit on. So it's always happy to come in on a Wednesday and do this. And of course, we've got to talk about some bloody good games.
Oh, I love some bloody good games.
I do as well. So let's start off with yours.
Start with mine?
Yeah. So
thanks, Aussie Broadband, being part of our bloody good games of the week. Mine is Calico. So I actually picked up Calico for free through Prime Gaming recently, and it's been a while since I've played a cozy game, and you know, I guess amongst all like The Witcher and The Quarry, which have me like on edge and like, you know, very fast paced kind of games, I think it was just nice deciding to go for something a little bit more laid back, a little bit more chill. So basically this game, you are in a world that's full of magical people. And your auntie has retired her cat cafe. And it's basically your job to run that cafe again, bring it back to life, furnish it, and also invite the many animals, not just cats, but many animals back to your cafe. And you can make food, and there's lots of characters and like quests and stuff that you go on to meet more characters, explore the world a bit more. So there is an element of exploration in there too, which is really fun. The music is gorgeous, which you can probably hear a little bit of at the moment. So this game is developed by Peachy King Games. And I believe it actually went up on, they started off on Kickstarter with this game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then it's published by Whitethorn Digital, who are responsible for a game that came out last year, which was actually the first game that I ever reviewed, called Lake, which is another nice, cozy game. And also published
Hang on. This cannot be a real cat. It's in the water.
Yeah.
It cannot be real.
There is so much about this game that's like, that cannot be happening. Like this. Exhibit A, there's a cat just rolling down the street. And lots of cats just walking. You can pick up cats or animals and you can wiggle them a little bit. You can pet all the animals in the game. Because I know that's a very important
question. Big chunkus.
There's so many different animals. It's so good. There's like a little red panda, there's polar bears, there's dogs. It's really cute, and I think the game itself is quite approachable. I didn't even know you could ride on a broomstick until now. I haven't gotten to that
point. Is that a cat bell on the mountain as well?
Yes, there's little.
That's so cool.
And I found, like, when I started playing, there's a really, really big cat that's stuck in the tree trunk, and I don't know if I'm able to like coax it out like just yet. But it's cute. It's got this little element of magic, and the characters that live in this like little area with you are also really endearing and very sweet. And it was just a nice one to kick back with. And I love the art style. The art style of this and the color palette and everything about this was just what I needed. I think after having such an eventful last couple of weeks of me being sick and not getting to play much games, and just wanted to ease myself back into something that was nice and cozy and relaxing. I could definitely recommend Calico, and I do believe it's available on all platforms as well. Part of me wish I got this for the Switch, because it is quite cute, and I can imagine myself, especially with the weather in Perth being so cold lately, you know, cozied up in bed with some blankets and a hot chocolate and playing Calico. But yeah, I think this game is good for anyone of all ages. And it's one of those games as well that I appreciate not having very time sensitive kind of quests either. You can just really, really take your time with it. Yep. So yeah, that's my bloody good game of the week.
So with the exploration in it, does that go out and like, do you do side missions and get resources so you can build your cafe up more?
From what I've played so far, so I played a good 3 or 4 hours. Your cafe is quite small and you live like upstairs. At this stage, I don't believe you can expand it, but it is not one of those games that you need resources for.
Okay.
So it's not like a crafting game by any means, but in terms of, I guess, decorating your cafe and things like that, you do that by selling different types of desserts or treats and stuff in your cafe, so you earn money, and then you can like buy those items to decorate, and sometimes you might require different items to decorate to like do a certain quest or something like that. And all the characters, they all have their own different stories and a different personalities and different looks, and it just kept my interest, because I was like, oh, this is so interesting. Like, one of the characters is also like part owl and some of them are part cat, and it's very interesting, like that whole magical concept.
Are we talking like Avatar levels of mashing two animals together?
Yeah, I guess where, like, I think one of the characters, she had, like, the owl feet, but the rest of her were all normal. Or, like, there's a witch or something in the town as well, and she said that, like, a spell went wrong, and she's literally, like, half cat, like just a walking cat. But yeah, no, it is really, really nice. And I think this game came to me just when I needed it, which is always such a good feeling when you find a game like that. But yeah, that's my bloody good game of the week. Go play Calico if you're looking for something cute and cozy and magical. But what's your bloody good game of the week?
I technically didn't play anything this week, because I was watching so much GDQ that I didn't really play anything myself. But there was a run in GDQ, and I was so happy to see it there, because I absolutely adore this game, because it is just sheer stupid fun. Mm-hmm. Like, and that game is Deer Simulator.
This is a
video from GDQ there. So they're starting off, and I found this game because, as I've taken to doing, I'm going through Games Pass and go, okay, well, what looks interesting? So I downloaded this, and I just thought, we'll just see what's fun. And the game starts off like with this ridiculously in-depth creator, which you can sort of see on the screen here as a human, and there is just ridiculous levels of customization. And I spent a bit of time in here and go, wow, I thought this was a deer simulator. And then the very first start of the game is you're on a crosswalk and you get hit by a bus and become a deer.
Okay.
That's it. That's the start
of
the game.
I vaguely remember you mentioning this to me, but I've actually never seen this opening bit that we're watching on screen right now until just then.
Mm. It's just ridiculous how it starts. But the ridiculousness doesn't end there, because as soon as you get in, you're a deer. And I'm just running around as a deer, doing deer things. And then I found out I can beat up cars and beat up buildings. And eventually you gain the attention of the police, which are sheep to start with. And then there's polar bears in cars, and there's a bunny that is a sniper for some reason. And it is just ridiculous. Like,
how hard did your character hit your head?
I don't know. But look at how he runs. Like, that, the first time I worked out I could run, I lost my shit. Just because he's literally...
he's dual wielding and everything.
Oh, yeah. It's just stupid mayhem fun.
Can I just describe to the people who are listening to the podcast is that this deer is walking on both its hind legs, like doing an absolute sprint through...
Yeah. If you can imagine, like, big muscle-bound guy who's never skipped arm day in his life, walking around with his shoulders out, just... like, can't actually walk, is turning as he walks, sort of thing. This is what their steer looks like, but going 100 miles an hour. And just like, it's just so stupid, and I love it. And this is my game of the week, my bloody good game of the week, just because.
What's that flying in the sky?
It's a Leviathan. So you can finish this game, and the speed run of this game, I think, is like 20 minutes or something.
Yeah, right.
But there are other things to do and achievements to unlock. So there's like a big koala clinging to the side of a building. You can get a mech in it. It is just, like I said, it's just stupid, stupid fun. And it is just...
Could you see yourself speedrunning this?
possibly.
Potentially.
Like, because it's funny you say that, because after this they had a showcase of stuff that you can do in it, and he was showing off bits and pieces. And that's always one of the good things about watching things like GDQ, because you get the commentary from the players, and they have people on the couch behind them as well that also give commentary.
Yeah.
And so, look, in essence, it seems like a pretty straightforward speedrun. Because from watching this, there wasn't really any major glitches that I really saw.
Yeah.
I think there was a little bit of RNG in one of the fights, so that... For the uninitiated, RNG is random number generator, so it just means anything that's random.
But you're playing, so you're saying, like, with this one, like, you, like, they're playing pretty true to what the game wants you to do, rather than...
Well, it's... Yeah, so yes, in a way that they're playing through the game. They're doing things like when the police start coming out and whatnot, they start doing things like... what's the word? Like, they don't actively go to try and kill the police that come out, which me on a playthrough did because I wanted to clear out those enemies so I could shoot things.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so right, I want to talk about this dog. So there's a corgi boss here, but it's okay. Not just a corgi boss.
You can tell that I'm incredibly distracted right now. Yeah, I've just seen a corgi, for again, anyone who's listening, a corgi has flown out of the sky, but is now joining forces with a big rabbit, which has now also joined forces with two small sheep, and now it has polar bears for arms.
Yeah, and this is the type of game that we're talking about here. This it is just ridiculous. And like I said, when I downloaded it, because I didn't quite know what it was about, but it looked cool, so I thought I'll give it a shot. And then I started playing this. I died so many times because I was laughing so much.
I am both impressed and terrified.
Yeah, that is an appropriate reaction to this game. It's
I have to say as well, Reflex, thank you for the raid. I hope you have a really, really good stream. You were playing chess, and you do not sound like you've had a good time. I am sorry, my friend.
Does anybody have a good time playing chess?
I don't know. I just... I'm watching this deer fight this parkour.
And this is the first level. There is more. There is like...
This looks like a final boss fight. Like
No. This is a boss fight, but it's not final boss fight. Okay. Like, yeah, it's...
Excuse my goofy laugh, but I'm just watching all of this unravel, and it's...
There's a lot of, like, janky physics in it as well, and that just makes it more adorable, but yeah. But at the risk of going on and on about this game, that's my bloody good game of the week. Even though I didn't play it, just watching the GDQ run made me remember it, and I just loved it.
Well, there we have it. We have Dear Sim... And we have a Calico for not, bloody good games of the week. Thanks not to
just
Broadband.
Not just Dear Sim, but it's Dear Sim.
Yes, there's multiple. There's like five E's in it.
Yeah.
But thank you, Aussie Broadband.
Yes,
for
thank
bringing
you
us a bloody good game of the week.
That's it. So much fun.
I feel like, especially with the start of the show, talking to Smoke, we need to talk a little bit more about speedrunning. Because
I'm so glad you feel that way, because I could talk about speedrunning for forever.
Well, that's the thing, because you might have heard me mention it in the interview just then, but when I played the Resident Evil 3 remake, I was like, oh, I'm going to try speedrunning it. And speedrunning it to me was just trying to finish the game as quickly as possible, but then that was kind of it. But then I realized once I started watching other people speedrun some of the Resident Evil games, just how cleverly done... Like, I guess the way that they played it contributed to how quickly they finished it. Like, there were just so many things that they either just ran straight past, because part of me just wants to fight everything in my way, and I realize maybe now that's not ideal for speedrunning. And you were talking about Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, so I was going to bring this video up so that if you can, you'll be able to watch it. It's... So I'm just going to have this playing in the background so the viewers can watch it, and just while we're talking about it, so you can see how quickly this goes by. So all right, well, let's talk a little bit about what people do with speedruns as well. So you might have heard Smoke talk about gold, and he just said gold. So when people do a speedrun, they have splits. So basically splits are indications where you're at. So you get to a certain point, like the Legend of Zelda speedrun that we've got up at the moment has splits for sword, shop, crawl space, movie night. So his split is when he gets the sword and when he goes to the shop and when he enters some sort of crawl space. I'm not exactly sure where that is. But that's basically a marker so that they know how well they're going.
For example, sword here is at 3:49. If they meet it at 3:50 or 3:55, they know that's like a...
Yeah,
that's
it. And when they say gold, the program that they use to record the splits, it will show up gold if that's the best time of that segment that you've done.
Right.
So if you go over time, it'll be red. I think that there's a green too. I'm not quite sure what the green means, but gold is what they want because that is the best time they've ever done.
Yeah.
But it's just such an interesting process, especially like when you watch people and they just break games. Like they clip through a wall and just end up going somewhere that's completely out of bounds. They have no idea where anything is, but they can navigate their way through and find it.
And I didn't even realize until you showed me just before we went live that there are so many different variants of the same game that you can also speed run. So I wasn't aware, like you were talking, we were like, let's use Super Mario World, for example. Mm. How many different variants of a type of speed run do you think we saw there? Like at least maybe 10 or 15 the very least.
I laugh at that a little bit because sometimes that's just about somebody's gone, I'm having fun with this. Let's make a new category. So like I've watched a lot of Mario speedruns over the years in various Mario games. And there's a streamer, Grand Pooh Bear, who streamed a lot of Mario 3 to begin with. That's his favorite Mario. But he basically invented a new category in there, and him and his mates were running out, and called All Forts. So it means you had to finish all of the fortresses in Super Mario 3, but you didn't have to worry about finishing the castles.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and it is just it's things like that where there's different categories that they can run. But they've got to remember as well, these are the top people. These are the people that spend so much time playing the game. I mentioned before we started streaming as well that there's one guy, I think he currently holds the Super Mario Brothers 3 world record, Mitch Flowerpower. That's all he does. Whenever he goes live on Twitch, he is playing that game, and he plays it for 4, 6, 8 hours almost every day. And yeah, it's ridiculously hard to keep up with that.
Well, I'm gonna ask a question to chat just while we talk more about speedrunning. But one, has anyone here ever speedrun anything before? Or if you haven't, if you had to pick one game to speedrun, what would it be? Because I know, like, for some of us, there are some games, like, we know, like, the back of our hand because we've played it that many times. But, like, maybe you've never thought about speedrunning it, per se. I think
it doesn't have to be going for world record. It's just have a go at it. See how fast you can get.
I'm sure, like, with my Resident Evil 3 one that I did, I wrote my personal best down somewhere. So I was like, look, if I come back to it, I'll give it another go. But I feel like the next time I go into it, I'm going to be a bit more strategic. Just because, like you said, there's so many, like, we're talking about Mario and Zelda where there were different little, like, glitches that allow them to just, like, progress in the game so much faster or get them to a certain point that you wouldn't have known, like, I know I wouldn't have known otherwise unless I looked it up or researched it or something like that.
That's it. And it was like Smoke was saying, you're not racing against the best person in the world, you're racing against yourself. You're going for a PB to try anything out. Like, even back when I was a kid, so I'm going to show my age here. I played Super Mario World when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I could finish that in 20 minutes as a kid running through Star Road. And yes, that's on the 11 exit speedrun version. That's the category that would have been in.
Yeah.
And that's, I forget how much, like under 10 minutes, I think. Mm-hmm. So, like, as a kid doing that, 20 minutes compared to 10 minutes isn't bad.
Yeah.
Like that's a pretty good run there. So, it's – and, of course, it always comes down to practice. You know, like Smoke was saying – sorry, I was going to call him Stormy then for a minute.
nope, that's me.
different S. But, yeah, it does – yeah, it's practice. You keep practicing. That's why he's, played 10,000-odd runs of – Jack 2, but only finished 100 because you get to a point and you reset and you start again and you try and perfect your movements.
Well, that's the thing. I'm sure, like, in the back of your mind, like, you would get to a point where you'd be like, oh, yeah, nah, I've taken too long in this bit. Or, like, they even said that there was an RNG, like, aspect to it as well. And I'm sure if you get dealt the wrong hand, you're like, oh, yeah, that's it. That's over for me. Yeah. Time to start again.
That's it.
But Gamma said that the game I would love to speedrun is Doom 2.
Ooh.
And then DJ Drifter says, no, I personally prefer to take my time and enjoy things. I play to relax, unwind from work, which is obviously super fair as well.
That's it, because it's okay just to play.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just very fascinating. I mean, for me, who doesn't know much about the speedrunning community and stuff, to know there's things like GDQ and things like that, and ASM and stuff. So I'm just so fascinated to, I guess, learn more, and I have friends who are fans of certain franchises, or they have played a certain game so many times over that it's just become a fun competitive thing against themselves to want to try and beat that time. And I can really appreciate that. I think that was really fun.
And it's interesting because I've seen a Ocarina of Time speed run done in, there was a demo in, I think it was that came with Twilight Princess on the Wii. And it was only like a 10-minute demo, so you only had 10 minutes to finish it. But the I think the full game is there because the speedrunners can finish it on that demo.
Yeah.
Because all the glitches, everything is still there. It's just when it hits that 10-minute mark, it just says, no, stop.
There are some games that really, that we were talking about earlier, that really surprised me.
Sorry, I just need to point out that
they just finished
Ocarina of Time.
In 7 minutes and 14 seconds.
Yeah, didn't even have to fight Ganon in that one. They just they found a glitch to go to the credits in Kokiri Village.
Because I've been watching this video while we've been chatting and seeing, oh, they're in the green. They've gone like, you know, 0.4 seconds earlier, 2.8 seconds earlier. And it's just, it's really, I think it's really fun just to watch it then. And you kind of, you find yourself naturally, I think, just cheering along and wanting to see them beat those times. I think it's really a fun thing to watch just as well as play.
Like, oh, yeah.
You were telling me earlier that there's speed running of Elden Ring, which I wasn't aware of.
Oh, yeah. It's like half an hour. Or I was trying to remember because there was like an any percent run that closed out GDQ, and I think that was 33 minutes or something. So that.
But surely it's with like an existing, like there's no way they did it right from the beginning.
They did it right from the beginning.
That really like pisses me off because like, they're like, I could spend 4 hours on like the same boss and not get anywhere with it. So to hear that someone can just do it from the beginning in record time, I'm just, I don't even know what to say.
Like, no word of a lot. Go look up some of your favourite games on speedrun.com and you will get angry at how.
Yeah, I think I'll just get frustrated at myself more than anything.
Or even, like, look at the really long ones. Like, there's one I watched in multiple stages on YouTube. I forget the guy's name, but he did a 100% run of Breath of the Wild. Now, for those of you that don't know what that entails, it is getting a lot of the upgrades, unlocking all of the fairy fountains, finishing all the divine beasts, getting all the Korok seeds. It's ridiculously big. And when I watched it, it was like 28, 29 hours.
I don't have time for that. Like that's huge. Like, props to them. That's intense.
And it's funny as well because, like, the rules around it is you could go to sleep in that, but the timer keeps running. So you could have a nap or you could just play straight through.
Yeah. No, that's a lot.
It's crazy. But, yeah, that's speedrunning. And I can't wait to see ASM 2022 start up next week. So that's...
Because what time is Smoke playing Jacks again?
So Smoke is playing Jack 2 at 9:30 a.m. Australian WA time.
That means next week
on Sunday.
For the podcast, we can...
Oh, not next week, week after.
Oh, week after next.
That's the 17th of July.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Yeah, we have to touch base back then and see how Smoke did.
But that's it.
We're all rooting for them.
But, this starts, I think I saw 8 a.m. Wednesday the 13th of July. So at 8 a.m. WA time, so 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And that is 9:30 a.m. Adelaide time, which is where the event is taking place. God, all those mental gymnastics I just had to do.
All those times. Yeah, I know.
You know what? What I really need to do is, like, on the Stream Deck is just, like, have WA time, Adelaide time, and Eastern time.
Yeah, for sure. Hi, everyone. How are we doing?
Oh, and then, God, go away, daylight savings, when I have to try and work that out as well.
Brain just explodes. Well, I know there was one particular story that you wanted to talk about this week, which is to do with Ubisoft.
Yes. So this one, this one's an interesting one because during the week, Ubisoft announced that they were closing down online services for some games. And yes, a lot of these games are old. If you go to GameOnOz.com, you can see the article there that Royce Wilson, our editor in chief, wrote.
A beautiful looking new website, by the way.
Oh, it is so good.
It is really good looking. You should definitely go check it out.
And like you look at the titles that they've got on there, and and it's like Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed 3, Brotherhood, Liberation, Revelations, Driver San Francisco, Far Cry 3, the 2012 release, there's some Ghost Recon, Future Soldier, Prince of Persia. And half of these games I didn't even know had online features. Mm. And there is a bigger list on the Ubisoft website about what it is and what's getting shut off. And a lot of it is multiplayer not accessible anymore or unable to link Ubisoft account. But there's a couple there that said you will no longer be able to download DLC.
Mm.
And I don't like that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really interesting because when I think about the games that the many, many franchises I have on my list of games that I want to get into, because I always say generally, I think I personally started playing games pretty late in my life. So I kind of missed the Assassin's Creed train and stuff when that started. So Assassin's Creed is a really good example in this case.
I was gaming when that happened and I still missed it.
Yeah. So well, I mean, for example, like we're going to talk about, you know, them not having – well, basically it says here that the installation and access to downloadable content DLC will be unavailable in, for example, Assassin's Creed 3, the 2012 release. I mean, part of me feels a bit sad knowing that if I was going to go through and be like, okay, I'm going to play all the Assassin's Creed games for the first time, knowing that I won't be able to access any of that DLC anymore, you know, whether it's linked to the DLC content's linked to the main story or not, I'm not going to be able to enjoy everything that they put out for it. Like, I don't know about you, but I'm not too fussed about missing out on the multiplayer aspect because, like you said, I didn't even realize some of these even had
That's it. And a lot of these titles are there for a single-player experience. They're not really there for the multiplayer, even though it's been included.
Yeah. So, like, what do you think about not having access to that DLC? Yeah, I mean, that's given if you haven't installed it. And we did just say that these games have come out at least 10 years ago or so.
Yeah, so there's a lot there. And the services will stop on the 1st of September 2022, so that's still a couple of months away. So if you do want to get the DLC for these, you can download them now still. But look, from a games preservation side of things, I don't like this because I still like – it's why I'm still a big proponent of physical media because stuff like this happens and you lose access to your stuff. And – Ubisoft are not saying that you can't access the core games themselves here, but the DLC is still part of the game. And it's like, because I think, is it November this year or was it last year where Nintendo were shutting down the 3DS and Wii U game shop?
Yes.
And that will cut off access to a lot of titles that you will never be able to see again because they might have been DS only titles because they use the touchscreen and all of a sudden they're gone.
Not to even mention just digital only releases and stuff too.
So yeah, that's it. But the digital only releases may have gotten a release on Steam and stuff like that. But because the DS was so different in its control style.
Yeah.
That is a little bit sad to me.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm having a look here as well because, for example, we're looking at games that primarily they're mentioning are either only on or are also on PC as well as the previous, like, generations that we can't get brand new games for anymore. And we're talking about things like PlayStation 3, Wii U, Xbox 360. I mean, I guess a counter argument to this is to be like, well, you know, Assassin's Creed 3, for example, came out 10 years ago. If you wanted the DLC, you would have downloaded it already. But then, like, for me, for example, who might want to go through the series, I'm going to be like, oh, well, I'm going to have to get it now, otherwise I'll never get a chance to play it again.
Mm. And look, consoles is one story. And Xbox, even the Xbox 360 store is shut, even though you might still be able to get them on the Series X and the One through the Xbox shop.
And I think I did read today, potentially their Games of Gold, they're going to be stopping 360 games.
I did see that. And I think the way I read it was they're basically running out of 360 games to put on there.
Maybe that's, like, when you look at it that way, it's like, okay, well, maybe that's not so bad. Yeah. They have put so many 360 games on there.
But yeah, consoles is one story. But for PC, I can't understand that. Like, Ubisoft has got their own launcher. So why you would stop people being able to download that. Like, it doesn't cost them anything extra to have that in Steam still. You know, it's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, it's a tricky one because, like, there are some instances where for some of these games that are on this list, it's not going to matter too much. Like you mentioned, some of them are just saying that you can't link your Ubisoft account to some of these games anymore.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed Revelation on PS3 and Xbox 360, you were unable to use multiplayer or online features, which is not a huge
loss, I don't think people pick up, well, I mean, I'm just assuming here, but I don't think someone would pick up Revelations just for the multiplayer.
No.
Like, you'd be playing it for the core game itself. Natty said, Zombie U is the best use of the tablet for the Wii. I never got a Wii U. I went from the Wii straight to the Switch, so I missed out on all that tablet.
I had a Wii U, and Zombie U was a lot of fun.
Was it?
It pretty much had permadeath in it. So, like, you started off as just this one person. You go through, and if you get killed, your body stays there. Any gear is still on you. So you can then start again and make your way back to your body and pick up all your gear again.
Yeah, right. So what are we losing from Zombie U then? What does it
we
say?
We are losing unable to link Ubisoft accounts or use online features. Because I think the online features for that were similar in that people could come into your game and you could see them there and stuff like that.
Okay, so, sure.
So a little bit of a multiplayer experience in the way that the Wii U did it.
Space Junkies. I didn't think that game as old as Assassin's Creed 3, or am I wrong here?
I'm not aware of it, but it looks like it's a VR game because it's saying HTC Vive and Oculus.
I was going to say, like, seeing the VR systems there makes me just assume that it's a slightly newer game as well.
Yeah, it possibly is, but it's...
Oh, look, it actually says here, as a multiplayer-only title, you will be unable to play the game going forward. So yeah. It means it's completely gone.
Yeah, and that's sad for me.
I mean, yes, it is an online-only game, and I guess, like, I wonder how they justify it. They're like, oh, is there just not enough people playing to justify keeping this game running?
And that may be true, but there might still be people out there playing. It's cases like this, especially on PC, where I wish that when it got shut down, it let people, they released like a server pack so people could run their own server. Like, I'm going to use my watch as an example, because the watch I've got is the Pebble watch. Now, I don't know how many of you know the history of smartwatches, because it's probably not many, but Pebble was the first idea for a smartwatch that got serious traction. They put up for a Kickstarter. They wanted $100,000 to get it going. They got like 14 million. So people just wanted it. And it's like, compared to the ones that Apple and Samsung put out now, it doesn't have a lot of that whiz-bang stuff. There's no touchscreen on it, but it does what I want. It gives me notifications. It shows me when people are ringing. It lets me control the music on my phone, and I can get all sorts of different watch faces. Now, since Samsung and Apple and Garmin and the rest have entered the market, Pebble couldn't afford to keep up, so they eventually shut down. But the last thing that they did before they shut down was basically unlocked the watch so that you didn't have to link it to the Pebble store to get new apps and new watch faces. There is just now a whole community around it that is making stuff for it still.
Oh, I think that's really clever. Mm. And I think that's incredible. Because I'd imagine any other company would be like, yep, see you later, you're done.
Well, especially because, like, Pebble sold their patents to another... I think they sold it to Garmin. They sold it to one of those fitness companies anyway. Mm. So the patents that they had were sold, and then they wound down the company. But just that move of, like, opening it up, so it's basically a freeware thing now that you can program what you like on it, use the APIs and do whatever the hell you like. And I wish that they would do that with games like Space Junkies that are online only, where they would release server tools so that you can spin up your own server and still play the game.
Yeah, I wish I can get into the minds of the people at any games company, not even just Ubisoft, and just be like, oh, I wonder, like, how much work or how much time in decision making goes into deciding, okay, now's the time to turn off support for this game.
It'll yeah, and especially with games that you buy outright and then have no method of making more money off them. How long do you run those servers for?
Mm.
And I do have a bit of a giggle when people look at Fall Guys and them going free to play and go, that's basically been a free to play game since launch. Like, you may have paid to start with, but they had other ways of making money. So going to free to play is just a logical step for them, because their battle passes and the stuff that you buy in game is how they make money so they can continue to support it. But other games that don't have that don't have ways to support it. So I can see it, and especially VR, as much as I love VR, it's still a niche thing.
It's still very, like, small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
in the whole scheme of things, I should probably add,
And multiplayer-only games require a pretty good player base. Yeah. So if it needs to connect to a server, that one's... Unfortunately, I'm not surprised by that, having had a lot of VR games and play them. Like, the main VR games that I will still go back to are the flight sims, because I just love zipping around. But I tried... There's one called Zenith, which is an MMO one, which I think I talked about last week.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of fun with that, but just... The sweat builds up around my face. I can only play that for an hour or two at a time. And if I'm playing an MMO, I am playing that thing all night. So VR still has its issues. And yes, I still have a Rift S helmet instead of like the Quest, which I think is a bit lighter.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the HTC Vibes and that sort of stuff and how they're going. But
I'm interested to see, I guess, going off what you're saying there in the future. Well, in the future of VR in general, but having multiplayer-based VR games, how long they can sustain themselves for. I think that's going to be a really big question over the next 5-10 years, just to see where it goes. As, you know, obviously technology is changing all the time. We're getting a new PlayStation VR at some point soon as well. That's something that really intrigues me. Yes, I can see single player stuff continue to do well. You know, I always go back to Beat Saber. Beat Saber is like a classic one for me to get back to. But
You mentioned that, and Natty's put in and the comment in chat was Feet Saner, and then she's corrected Saber,
but not feet. So Feet Saber. Am I missing another?
You go around and you chop off every people's toes.
It'll be interesting to see where things go from here. But I guess for some people with this Ubisoft story, yes, maybe it was only a matter of time before they started, you know, getting rid of the support for some of the online stuff. But when it does come to things like DLC for the game and not be able to uninstall it anymore, that's really quite
sad. To me, that's like not all these games that have no multiplayer or unable to link Ubisoft account. Don't care about that. But not being able to access DLC, that's a big one.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame. Mm-hmm.
But you know, there are games that disappear and you just don't see them anymore.
That's very true.
Or they you don't know where they've gone. And there was one Nintendo fan that did this in particular, and I found this quite hilarious because he wanted Nintendo to say where this game title had gone. It's F-Zero for those playing along at home, and most people today would probably only know Captain Falcon, who's in Smash. He's an F-Zero character.
Yeah, I didn't know anything beyond that, to be honest with you.
But this guy, he loves F-Zero so much. He bought, $58,000 Australian of Nintendo stock so that he could get up and ask, "Oi, what are you doing with this game? I want to play it."
That's really intense. I wish I had $58,000.
I got to say, if I had $58,000, I probably wouldn't be spending it on that. But yes, I get it. Like, I'd like to have that clout to be able to do that.
To be like, I bought $58,000 worth of stock because I wanted to ask Nintendo where my game is. I think a really great question that we were having for each other before that we want to ask everyone else as well is that if you had infinite money, you know. Any amount of money in the world to ask a games company any question, what would it be? Like, what game have you seen disappear that you're going to knock down on their door for and be like, "Hey,
I would go back to LucasArts now that EA doesn't have the exclusive license for Star Wars games and go, "Hey, LucasArts, you know that Star Wars 1313 game that you were working on before Disney bought Star Wars? How about we revive that? I want to see that game, please."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would ask for a complete remake and remaster of all the Zoo Tycoon titles and its expansions, which is very, very random. But I just feel like since the new release of like the most recent Zoo Tycoon, I feel like it was back in like maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It just didn't feel the same. And I just wish I could have... I remember going into like an EB Games store when I was probably about 10 years old, and they had this awesome 3-pack. I'm going on a tangent now, but they had this awesome 3-pack. It was Zoo Tycoon. You got the base game, and then you had the the water, for the lack of a better word, like the SeaWorld like kind of expansion where you can have like dolphins and orcas, and if you're really funny, you can chuck people in on their tanks and stuff. And then you also had like a dinosaur expansion, which basically made it like Jurassic Park. And it was the best. It was like when I think about like my earliest times like gaming and buying my own games rather than like being gifted games by friends and family. Yeah. I remember that one so vividly, and I'm craving like that kind of tycoon hit. And I just, if they just remade that and they, or if, and totally separate, but if they could bring back in some way, shape or form Disney Skate Adventure. Like, I had that on my original Xbox.
Is this like the Disney on Ice, the game?
No. It's like a skateboarding.
Oh.
Yeah, it was like skateboarding, and you could play as like your own character. You could customize or any of like the Disney characters from either, oh, testing my memory now. There was like Toy Story, The Lion King, and they had a wicked.
Wait, I can go skateboarding as Simba?
Yes, in Pride Rock as well.
So I have, this is a very important question I need to ask this. Does he stand on the skateboard on all fours, or does he stand?
All fours.
I kind of want to see him standing on his hind legs around.
You could play like, I think you could play like Pumbaa as well, and you could skate around Pride Rock.
Does he get boost by farting? Because I would love to see that.
No, I don't know. Maybe. I don't remember that much. The most I played was in the Toy Story world, because the best part was Andy's room was like, so big, and obviously you're so little, so you could skate across like all the like the alphabet blocks. You could skate in the bathroom, and obviously everything is huge. It was awesome, and it was like very much so like the more tricks and stuff you did, the more points you got, and then you had like time trials, and it was, oh man, it was the best. So it was so good.
Natty's got one in there, Boom Blocks. It was an EA and Steven Spielberg game on the Wii. I remember the Wii.
I've never heard of Boom Blocks.
I do remember it. Yeah, this one. Okay, let's bring it up.
I want to have a look at it. Oh my god!
But yeah, basically, so
this is what Natty wants.
Yeah, so basically, it was kind of a 3D Angry Birds, I guess, is a good way to describe it. So you got enemies on the screen, and you have to launch blocks at them, I think, by the look of it. But yeah, no, I vaguely remember that. And have, because like the Wii, obviously having the Wiimote made all games interesting.
I remember when the Wiimote got introduced and how like absolutely mind-blowing that was.
Do you remember? I remember playing so much Wii Sports. Yeah. And it was basically a tech demo, but it was just so much fun. Like me and my mates would sit there, we'd play golf. And we'd have a couple of drinks and we'd play golf.
I remember vividly going to a friend's house, and they were the first person I ever knew to have a Nintendo Wii. And everyone was just like, oh my god, this thing is incredible. You could play bowling by moving the controller in your hand. It's just like the real thing.
I reckon I must have sold like half a dozen Wiis, because I had a mate lived in Carnarvon, and I took my Wii up there and we were playing. And, yeah, I reckon I must have sold half a dozen Wiis to everybody up there, because they just looked at it and went, oh, my God, this is so much fun. Let's go.
Yeah.
But another one Natty says is Eternal Darkness for the GameCube. I would love – and this is one I missed out, because it came late in the GameCube life cycle. Mm-hmm. But it was just this amazing horror game. Like, you had this insanity meter, and the more you got scared, the more the insanity meter went up. And it was just, from everything I've heard about it, it was just so creepy and so well done. I forget who made Eternal Darkness, but yeah, I know it never got a release on any other system. And who made Eternal Darkness? Silicon Knights developed it. So that's a reasonably big studio. But yeah, no, I remember hearing about this game, and I need to go and find. I mean, I've spent freaking more money than I care to admit getting a GameCube copy of Twilight Princess. Maybe I should just go and find this one instead.
Or maybe you can also, with your $58,000, knock on Nintendo's door and be like, "Hey, when are you? What are you gonna?"
Nintendo.
The pain in your voice.
Yeah.
Please.
I just... I'm going to get started on a Nintendo rant because I love Nintendo games. I love what they do, but goddamn, they have some stupid ideas about various things like backwards compatibility and older games and just...
I think it's so interesting us talking about, like, I mean, actually, like Natty, ourselves, talking about, you know, if we had this amount of money, what games company would we ask for? And I think most of our answers have been remake or remasters of older games.
Actually, I would ask Nintendo, although I think Natty kind of answered this in the Discord, but it was one that I was talking about last week or the week before. But Nintendo, where is Advance Wars 1 and 2 Reboot Camp for the Switch?
Give us something.
It was supposed to come out in December last year, then it got pushed back to April, and now it's gone.
Yeah. But there you go. Yeah. Is that what you're going to do?
That's another one I would like to do. But yeah, that is this week's big question. Is that if you could ask a video game company any question you want, what would it be? I've thrown a few out there. I feel like I've got a lot more. And I just quietly, I had to repeat that there because there was definitely a rant coming, and I'm not ready for that just now. We're getting towards the end. We've been going for about an hour now, and I wasn't ready to be here for half an hour as I complain about Nintendo and why I love and hate them at the same time.
Yeah, and your love for Zelda. We could be here all night.
Oh, I love Zelda. I can collect Star Wars games and Zelda games. I don't care about the Mario games, but the Zelda games. And just quietly, like, I had a really good find. One of the retro shop down in Kelmscott, Retro Collect. It still had another shop in Mount Lawley here in Perth, but the one in Kelmscott was closing, so I went down and had a look at what I could find. I found Empire Strikes Back for the Atari. Oh. And I had to have that. I just need to get an Atari now.
That's mine.
That's it. It's mine. It's definitely mine. It is in my collection. But I mean, I also, like I said, I also own the GameCube copy of Twilight Princess. So bit of history of Twilight Princess. It was supposed to come out on the GameCube, but it was held off long enough that the Wii launched as well. So it got released on the GameCube and the Wii, but because the Wii sold so well, there's virtually no copies of Twilight Princess on the GameCube. So it's worth a shit ton of money.
There's your bragging rights.
And same, Breath of the Wild got released on the Wii U as well. So if you've got a copy of that.
Yes, I actually do remember that. But yeah. I didn't see many.
Yeah, here's another little bit of trivia. Because Link's actually left-handed. But because most people in the world are right-handed, Nintendo thought when they released Twilight Princess on the Wii U, on the Wii, that people would be confused. So instead of like making Link right-handed, they flipped the whole map.
Oh.
So they mirrored it. And that's why, like, a lot of Zelda purists, when they play the game, right, well, you're looking at a map of Hyrule, Kakariko Village is always on the right-hand side. But on Twilight Princess on the Wii, it was on the left because they have literally just mirrored the whole thing.
Yeah, right.
Rather than, like, trying, because that was easier to do than making Link right-handed normally.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Little bit of Zelda trivia. I actually didn't know that. That was really interesting.
I'm full of something sometimes. but I think that's about all the time we got for you tonight. Because I speak English real good. That was a proper sentence that I just said. No nuts and bolts tonight. That has moved to Thursday night. So
what time on Thursdays?
I don't know.
Oh, it's a mystery.
Yeah, Natty's going to be airing that one for me because I've normally got hockey training on Thursday night. So stay tuned to the socials and just look for that going live signal.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, if you want to read or watch or see any more amazing cool things we do, we are all on the socials, but gameonoz.com.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget Streamaholics on Friday night as well.
And thank you to Aussie Broadband for helping us bring forward our bloody good game of the week.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Cool. Have a good night, guys.
Bye.
Bye.